Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, Saturday is National Healthcare Decision Day, and so today seems like a perfect time to talk about advanced care planning and have a couple of guests for you. Joining us, Dr. Lee Vogel. She is Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She is also a founding member of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Dr. Lee Vogel, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us. This is an important topic, and my colleague Ben and I certainly enjoy being able to share information and help people discuss this.
Well, great to have you here. Ben Adams, great to have you here as well. Ben serves as an advisor to the Board of Directors of the Elder Law and Special Needs Section of the State Bar of Wisconsin. Of course, he's an attorney and emeritus director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. And Ben, good to have you with us.
Hi, Larry. Thank you very much for inviting Lee and I to be part of the show this week. It's a good time to talk about these things, I think.
Absolutely. So as you listen to our two experts, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. How will your medical decisions be made if you are not able to speak for yourself? Have advanced directives documents helped you when you or a loved one couldn't make decisions? Maybe an experience to share. Love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Ben, let's start with you. You know, there are sort of legal issues and medical issues, and maybe ask you about the legal part. What's advanced care planning first, and why is it legally necessary?
Sure, Larry. Advanced care planning is looking ahead to things that could occur, whether they're foreseeable or not. And the reason that people need to do this is because once a child turns 18, for example, they're an adult legally in Wisconsin, and their parents can no longer make any decisions for them whatsoever, unless that child has completed and signed an advance directive, either for medical decisions or for financial decisions. And parents just don't understand this. That's one of the reasons my wife, Debbie, and I voluntold our children that they would be signing advance directives when they turned 18 as graduates from the high school. And it's critical, not that they can foresee what decisions they might want made for them, but at least they have somebody who doesn't have to go through the court system and become appointed a legal guardian before they would have any decision-making authority.
Yeah, that's really important. Dr. Lee Vogel, medically, why is it so important?
Well, I think, you know, many of us have either experienced or witnessed loved ones and friends being able to be cared for by physicians and our toolkit in modern medicine that is pretty remarkable. We can help people recover from an awful lot, whether it be accident or injury or illness. But I think it's also safe to say that there are times where modern medicine can be applied in ways that do things to people, but not necessarily for them. We always want to be able to offer beneficial care, and we certainly want to focus on the kind of care and quality of life that people deem acceptable to themselves. And I honestly have witnessed over the time that I've practiced from the early 80s until now, you know, an increasing focus on, you know, doing what works and what provides quality, but being a little bit more thoughtful as individuals about longevity at all costs.
Yeah. And, you know, here we are in Wisconsin, about 1 in 3 people have filled an advance directive out. What stops them from doing it? Is it, I suppose in some cases it may be a lack of just knowledge, but there are probably other reasons as well.
Yeah, Larry, this is Ben. I think one of the things is people are always going to do it tomorrow. And there's a saying that I think Lee and I like to use with people that says it's always too soon until it's too late. So it's one of those things that, you know, we're planning a birthday party, we're planning the wedding, we've got things to do, we're going to get to that, we'll get around to it, and then suddenly an illness or an accident or COVID-19 intervenes, and now suddenly you needed a decision maker and they don't have authority. And it's different in other states. Other states may allow legal decision making by relatives or spouses or parents, but Wisconsin does not. So in Wisconsin, we need either a legal document completed properly or a court order.
You know, I took a look at the forms. Maybe you should just explain that. It didn't appear to me to be overly difficult.
It depends. There are a number of legal documents that can be completed. As long as they meet certain requirements, they're going to be valid. And it's not, the point of this kind of planning is not to make every decision in advance. It's number one, to talk with your family member, your friends, your agents, who's going to be your spokesperson, talk about what your values are and how you think you might approach future health decisions. And then to get this document completed so that person can step in and be your advocate when you can no longer speak for yourself, because that's when this comes up.
Yeah, Larry, I appreciate that you took a look at the forms and you don't think that they're too difficult, because I think that's a good message for us to be able to give to our audience and to public and to friends and family, is that it shouldn't be an onerous process with a lot of hoop jumping. Mostly it should be an opportunity to be reflective about your values and your wishes and to try to think ahead about what kind of an experience do you want to have and what do you want people to speak about and to and for you, should you not be able to make your own decisions. So we really do want it not to be too onerous.
Talking with Dr. Lee Vogel, one of our guests today, and also Ben Adams, an attorney, about planning for your health care needs. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Steve and Nina, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Larry. I have a question for your guests with regard to, I do have an advanced care document. It was done years ago by an attorney. My wife had one. I have one. I have two questions. The first one's pretty easy. We signified one of our five children as the person who was supposed to step in on our behalf. And I'm thinking, would it be wise to maybe have two of our five so they could put their heads together on decisions? That would be the easy question. The second question is, there was a paragraph that was put in there specifically that addressed our mental capacity. And if we become incapacitated, they were not, specifically not, supposed to be able to commit us to an institution long-term, no psychotic drug, no drugs that would be experimental drugs. And there's probably a little bit more to it. Could you comment on both of those, please?
All right. Couple of good questions there. Ben, do we start with you?
Sure. Thanks for calling, Steve. It is important, and I'm glad to hear that you and your wife did your documents years ago. The critical part of that phrase is years ago to me. I think it's wise for you to think about, should we be updating these? I think it's important to name alternate decision makers, to name a sequence of decision makers if you have them. So you and your wife may still want each other to be first, although I've had my share of spouses who thought, I would rather have the kids than my husband or my wife, given how things are developing with our own decision making. So you have to address that or assess that when you're doing this. And then it is not a good idea, in spite of how it may seem, to name co-decision makers. That's technically not specifically allowed in Wisconsin. So you can name 1, 2, 3, but you can't name somebody as either or as and. So if you're thinking, Steve, you'd have, you know, one person, and if they can't do it, a second and a third, and you could name a sequence of your spouse and all your kids if you felt like that. But you really are wise to do it in the alternative as a 1, 2, 3, 4, rather than try to group them together.
And the other half of it had to do with mental capacity, some new information there. Dr. Vogel, would you comment there?
Yeah, I like to do that. It suggests, I could be wrong, Steve, but I'm wondering if your document wasn't actually drafted by the attorney as opposed to using an established form. But either way, it is something to think about. If you were in a situation where you couldn't make decisions for yourself, you didn't have the mental capacity, perhaps a dementia or something, a stroke that created the inability to speak for yourself or understand things, to try to be reflective about situations where maybe your family couldn't care for you and you needed some long-term care. If you explicitly said no to that, it can make it a little bit more difficult for your family to navigate that journey for you and to have a guardian appointment. And please weigh in on this, Ben. And the other issue is sometimes we think that just creating, statements about no psychotropic drugs or antipsychotics or a variety of explicit things may tie the hands of the surrogate decision maker or the person, your agent, your child in this particular situation, in terms of making the best decisions that are offered by a physician or a team of physicians providing the care. There may be certain instances where those decisions actually do and afford an improved quality of life. So that's kind of my thoughts about that. The other thing is that the forms that we use that are statutory and or in compliance do indicate that you can say, give permission for somebody to help with placement in a nursing home setting. It helps move you out of the hospital. But there are things in place that if somehow you were indicating some objection, that then it would have to go through a court process. So there is that protection. I don't know, Ben, if you have something you want to weigh in on.
I guess the other element I would add to that, Lee, is that the state statutory, the healthcare document that Steve may have used with his attorney, does have a section that's titled Limitations on Mental Health Treatment. And it provides that you cannot, under Wisconsin law, pre-authorize somebody to admit you to a mental treatment facility. That has to go through the court process or else be voluntary by the person who may need that kind of treatment. So that's just a standard, very hard to understand because of the way it's written section of a lot of these forms, Steve. Mm-hmm.
Steve, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Peter in Ashland a chance to join in. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I have a reason why it's good besides some of the things you're saying, and then I have a question. My mother just passed away, and it was a long illness going downhill, and because years ago, she had decided exactly what she wanted done, and all seven of us were aware of it. There was no arguing or one person saying, well, I think she wants this or I want this. We were all, and she made sure we were all in agreement in advance. She made it very clear and had it in writing. And that was a big advantage. But the question is a spouse also need a directive? I, for some reason, thought spouses could speak for the other spouse no matter what.
Yeah, that's a pretty common understanding or misunderstanding that people have in Wisconsin. Your spouse is not your legal decision maker. In spite of what one or the other of you may think about that, it's just not the case. So when you're doing these advanced directives, sometimes one of the spouses has a medical situation that causes you to recognize, hey, I need this directive in place. And you're surprised a lot of times that the other spouse doesn't do it at the same time, but they definitely should. And then these things have to be updated periodically in terms of conversations with your various agents. Your mother gave you a gift as a family to be sure she had her plans in place and that she communicated it to everybody. And sometimes everybody doesn't come from the same page, but if everybody can respect what the person wants, then you don't have people that are second guessing any kind of decision that might have been made along the way.
Yeah, you can imagine the kind of family dynamics and negative and arguing and so forth and so on that could occur if you didn't have that directive in place. Peter, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health. Ben Adams, Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, our guest today, talking about planning for healthcare needs. And if you have a question, you can join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening in today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Attorney Ben Adams and Dr. Lee Vogel, our guests today. Questions, join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Nancy in Wausau. Nancy, thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. Very interesting topic. I had a question about transferability of advance directives. We have kids all over the country. And if it's executed in Wisconsin, is it valid in New York, et cetera? And then my second question is, what are the legal requirements? Does it need to be notarized? Do I have to go through an attorney? Or is it simply a form I can download from the internet and fill out and sign?
Mm-hmm. Good questions, Nancy. Let's see. Ben, do you want to start?
Sure. Nancy, thanks for calling. Those were the next questions on our list of topics that we wanted to be sure we talked about this morning, so we couldn't have asked it any better. If your children are Wisconsin residents, then they can legally sign a Wisconsin healthcare power of attorney. So we have a daughter who moved out of state this year. She executed her healthcare power as a Wisconsin resident when she became 18. That will still be respected in the other state for medical decision making. If somebody executes a power of attorney for healthcare in another state and they move here, it will, and I'm sure Lee will agree, be honored for medical decisions, although Wisconsin has a little quirk when it comes to admission to a nursing home for long-term treatment. So that we won't go too much into that. So that's if your kids now live in another state and they're residents there, they should contact their healthcare agency, their healthcare system, to see if there are resources available or community resources to get this document completed. They are available widely online. Larry, you have a terrific resource for some of those contacts on your website for today's program.
Yeah.
Two of them posted that we can talk about that really will help people get local help if they need it to get these completed. And then in Wisconsin, the documents are witnessed by two adult impartial witnesses. They can't be witnessed by your family members or your agents.
And so go to ideas@WPR.org/Larry, and we've got the list. You can just click on any of them and go right to those forms. We have them up on, and go to today's show, and under program notes, it'll be there. Dr. Vogel, you wanted to add something too.
Yeah, I think as a physician, I hope that we don't try to get too hung up on where the document was signed or in what state, because we're really looking for all the ways that we possibly can, and better if formalized, to understand what somebody would want or what kind of a decision they would make. We call it substituted judgment. But if they could make the decision themselves but couldn't speak for themselves, what would their wishes look like to help guide us? And so sometimes, you know, we will be really trying to, you know, understand conversations. If there's no document, are there progress notes that were written by physicians who had these detailed conversations? But that's the key, is the document, but also the conversations behind it. And that's hugely important that we have these conversations. Back to the beginning, Larry, when you were wondering about why don't people do this, I think part of it is kind of testimony to our culture of how uncomfortable people feel in talking about, you know, the end of their life or dying.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Nancy, thank you so much. Tammy in Milwaukee will give you an opportunity now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, and this might be a little outside of what you can help me with, but my parents own a farm with 40 acres. And they are concerned that if they end up in assisted living, that acreage and home would be taken from us, the kids, which they want to leave it to us. So do they need to do an irrevocable trust, or could they sell us the property before their death, before any of this would happen?
It's a little out of the area, but Ben,
for me.
Yeah, I think that one's for you, Ben.
So I would recommend that your parents get some planning advice from an elder and special needs law attorney, someone who's a member of the elder law and special needs section of the state bar, and possibly even the Academy of Special Needs Attorneys. So that, you know, they need to find out what their options are. And the only way to do that is to sit down with somebody who's really an expert in these areas. Part of that planning will also include discussion and hopeful completion of advance directives for medical decisions. One of the things about elder law attorneys is we tend to approach things comprehensively and look at the big picture and not just focus on the one issue that a client might think is their priority. But we'll definitely cover that as well.
Makes good sense. Tammy, thank you. Dave in Menominee Falls, on to you. Thanks, Dave, for calling.
Good morning, Larry. So my question for your two guests are, I have a 24-year-old son who owns his own S Corporation. He has a tool and die shop in Menominee Falls. And it is he and I. He owns the business. So if something were to happen with him, I would need to be able to, you know, financially take care of the business and do the healthcare part for him. So can I, those forms that are on the website, can I just fill those out? And if so, who do I file those with?
Yeah,
well, I guess this one's mine too. Your son and you probably should be seeing a good comprehensive, maybe a business law attorney as well as potentially an elder law attorney, I think, because there's certain delegation of power documents that your son may want to execute and sign and be sure they're going to hold water. And I would definitely advise not to just pull something down off the internet or from a free website and think it's going to work. So they really, I think these folks would need some advice from the business side as well as the personal planning side.
Yeah.
The one thing I might add is that, you know, it's very confusing for people, and sometimes terms are used interchangeably when you actually do try to approach this kind of thinking and decision making. And it's not uncommon for us as physicians to be in situations where families, where a family member says, well, I can speak for my husband, or I can speak for my mom or my dad, because I'm their, quote, their power of attorney. And there's a lot of confusion around powers of attorney that are really around estate and financial matters, as opposed to durable powers of attorney or advanced directives that really speak to specifically to health care decisions.
Yeah, good points. Dave, thank you for calling. Doug in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, I'm calling to ask what you need to do to make sure that if you want to be released from a hospital and cared for at home, for example, by hospice care, that you can do that and not be released to a nursing home. My mom had an advance directive naming me. She was in the care of a local hospital that I won't name here. They determined there was nothing else that they could do for her. Her wish was to die at home. They took the advance directive that she had on file with them and looked at it and said, all right, we're not going to extend her life in the hospital. We will release her to her nursing home. We said, no, she wants to be released to home care. They said, we can't do that. We will not do that. Then, fortunately, I had a health care power of attorney, a separate document, that gave me the authority to move her directly to home care and not a nursing home. And I thought the advance directive was going to be sufficient. It was not.
Ben,
I'll go ahead and weigh in there a little bit. it's always a little difficult not understanding all the circumstances, but you, Doug, you did, I think, a nice job of conveying the real distress that you had in making this decision. Can I just briefly ask, did your mother then go home with hospice, and was there somebody at home that family members that would take turns and be there for her and with her during that time?
Correct. The healthcare power of attorney, unlike the advance directive, said that we could provide healthcare for her at home and arrange for it with hospice care. And once we did that and demonstrated it to the hospital, then the doctor was able to release her directly to our house. And that's actually my wish as well and my wife's wish. We have that in our power of attorney, but we only put that in our power of attorney in addition to an advance directive because that happened to my mom. Hmm.
Without actually seeing the two documents to compare what caused the doctors to conclude one thing with one and one thing with the other, let me just generally say that the goal of these things is to provide the kind of loving care and, you know, beneficial care. And it sounds like she thought this out and you all thought this out. And so facilitating her transfer to home for her last days with care. The one thing I think is wonderful, and I commend you for pushing through that. And I apologize if there was barriers on the part of put up by the doctors. I think that the one thing to know is that sometimes hospice care, I mean, one of the requirements for hospice care is that there be what we call a primary care provider, a primary care person who will take care of people so that we're not discharging somebody to home who has great needs and can't care for themselves and there's nobody there. But it doesn't sound like that was a circumstance. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you prevailed, but these shouldn't be used as barriers.
Yeah.
Right. Can I?
Yeah, Larry, go ahead, jump Ben. Jump in.
I just want to say that this story really shows you the importance of having whoever you name as your agent be an advocate for you and fight for you. And sometimes, you know, the system or the providers tend to be focused in a certain direction. And sometimes you need to do a great deal of advocacy to be sure that your loved one's wishes are respected, if at all possible. Also, the confusing thing about different terms for these documents. Normally, an advance directive, a healthcare power of attorney is a type of advance directive. Normally, I don't hear somebody say, I have two documents, one's an advance directive and one's a power of attorney for healthcare. Again, without seeing those documents, I can't really answer the question of what the difference might have been. But I am glad to hear that you prevailed and that your mom's last illness was able to be taken care of by home hospice.
Yeah, Brett and Madison had actually emailed to ask if there's a difference between advance directive and a power of attorney.
The advance directive, I think, is the general category of legal planning documents for medical decisions. And normally, a lot of them are called advance directive and healthcare power of attorneys. Lawyers tend to just say power of attorney for healthcare, and I think the medical systems use that interchangeably with advance directive.
Got it. Doug, thank you. Wendy in Orfordville, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and thank you for having this program. I really appreciate it. I was concerned about something that happened to me and my sister. My sister was living with me during COVID. She sort of got stuck here. And she was moving from Massachusetts to Colorado. She has a healthcare power of attorney, her daughter in Colorado. And she got bit by a local dog and ended up in the emergency room at a local hospital and then in the ICU. Needless to say, once they got her to ICU, she was not allowed to have anyone come anywhere near her. But the evening that we were there, they were very concerned that she was going to die of sepsis because her body was contaminated. She was almost 80, but she's in very good health up until then. So when they said, the doctor on staff at that time said that they were going to ask her if they wanted her to resuscitate her if she happened to pass out or whatever, because she had a DNR. And she was quite insistent on that, as I was also. But in this particular case, where it was just sort of an emergency situation, they didn't quite know what to do. And I said, well, I felt comfortable making the decision. They said, we don't want you even to talk to her. Now, this is a gal who wears hearing aids but doesn't hear very well, even, and she was very compromised already. They would not allow me to speak for her. They said, she can talk to us. She's perfectly fine. We will ask her. And so they went with her decision. They wouldn't even allow me to see her. Again, part of it was COVID, but part of it was not. And so we were both very concerned about it. She did recover, thank goodness, but she had massive infusions of all kinds of stuff. And 4 days later, when she was still in the hospital and I was able to see her, I asked her about that. And I said, do you remember about that? And she said, I don't know anything about it. I don't remember anything. I mean, her blood pressure was so low. She was barely coherent, but she could speak. And generally, with hard of hearing people, I found out they often act like they hear everything, even with hearing aids, where they only catch words and try to put them together. But she was so compromised anyway. So I guess in an emergency situation like that, where they asked me if I had a healthcare power of attorney, and I did not. Her daughter does. I think I was on the list of about number four, but we couldn't have accessed that document at 2 a.m. anyway. Nobody would have answered the phone. No, we couldn't have gotten it. So in situations like that, do you have any suggestions or what to do? I'm sure there's other people who have sort of emergency situations where somebody lives out of state or comes from somewhere else that you might be able to help me with.
Okay, sure. Ben, you want to start?
Sure. That's a very difficult situation, and I would hope that situation was highly impacted by the COVID situation and stresses that everybody, all of us, and the medical side was struggling with at that point. And I think you're exactly right. With people who don't hear well, as a lawyer, I always felt like I needed to be extra sure that I was communicating with them, because they made me feel like the smartest guy on the planet. They would agree with everything I was saying. And when I would get deeper in with them, I would find out they weren't really hearing and understanding at all what I was saying sometimes. So I think it's, you know, probably the most important thing you tried to do there was advocate with the medical side of, you really need to be sure you're getting her opinion. The problem with healthcare directives and power of attorneys is they have to be activated before they go into effect. And even her daughter might not have been in a position to be able to speak for her if the medical side really felt like she was still her own decision maker. So I think I would still go back to what Lee was saying before, that you know, good medical care, they try to find out everything they can about what somebody's wishes are or what type of discussions have been going on or what type of indications are out there. But sometimes under pressure, what they're going to do is treat you and try to make you better until, you know, better information can come to light. So I don't know that I can say anything more helpful than that. And I'm not sure that's very helpful at all.
Thank you for calling, Wendy. Appreciate your call. We'll give Tom in Green Bay a chance to join in. Tom, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You know, you're talking about finding a lawyer. My wife and I are trying to do that right now. We have no idea. What kind of cost are we looking at? And how do we determine which one of the lawyers? And we looked at, you know, a list of a dozen lawyers. How do we pick one?
And this is for estate planning and kind of comprehensive, Tom?
Sounds like Tom may have left us. I'll jump in to start on that. You know, I think one of the ways is word of mouth from people that you know. Another way would be, I've always advised people to look for an experienced, not a brand new attorney in the field of practice that you're interested in, whether that's estate planning as a practice or elder law. I've done a lot of wills and power of attorneys and comprehensive planning for kids in their 20s with their first three-month-old child. It's just, as an elder law attorney, I approach that looking a lot more at lifetime decision-making as well as what happens when I die. And I've seen, Larry, that a lot of clients come in and all they're focused on is what I want to happen after I die. And they can miss completely the importance of doing healthcare directives and having these conversations and making your financial planning. So I would tell you to look for a good elder law attorney based on my experience.
And I'd like to add that, in respecting attorneys and the skill set that Ben brings in elder law, would also like to make sure that people understand that the vast majority of advanced directives that we want people to complete doesn't require the assistance of an attorney. And in fact, it really is about getting the document, reviewing it, having the conversations with your family, your loved ones, the person who you would like to know and make decisions for you if you couldn't, and then your physician and healthcare team as well. So, and all of that can, bypass an attorney and the cost of an attorney, but doesn't necessarily exclude, I'm not saying don't go to an attorney for really good planning for those non-medical kinds of activities and thinking at the end of life.
And I would echo that, Lee. I think, Larry, I would direct your listeners to go to your website today for the show, download the advanced care planning document for Wisconsin. It has local health system resources and organizations like the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Certainly, if you have the financial side you're going to do and you see an experienced elder law attorney, somebody who's a member of the elder law and special needs section of the state, I think you'll be well protected. But there are a lot of local resources to help with the health side. And we tried to list all of them on this document that we've got for your show today.
Yeah, and there's quite a list, and I would urge you to go to our site, ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and click on those, and you're going to be able to, right at your fingertips there, get the information that you need in order to complete this this very valuable and important document or set of documents. There's a few to look at for sure. Tom, thank you again. Jeff, do you have a quick question?
Yes, it's a very quick question.
Go ahead.
In Wisconsin, is it legal for a lawyer who writes up a will or a trust agreement or upon death there's a bill of sale, any legal document, is it legal for a lawyer to sign it as a witness and as a notary? I know there's two witnesses required plus the signature of the party involved, the estate. But can the lawyer sign it twice legally in Wisconsin?
Yes, as long as the lawyer is not notarizing the witness's signatures as well. I've been the notary and a witness on lots of documents, so there's no problem with that. Larry, I would like to say that the other document on your website is a gift to your family, a free healthcare booklet from the State Bar Association of Wisconsin. That has the advanced directive in it. It has a lot of conversation questions that you can use with your kids and your agents. And it's a free download until April 22nd, courtesy of the State Bar of Wisconsin.
That's wonderful. And I want to thank you both again. ideas@wpr.org/Larry. Go there, and you're going to get all of the documents that we've been talking about today. It's been a real pleasure, Dr. Vogel and Ben, to talk with you today. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Attorney Ben Adams, founding volunteer member of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership, serves as an advisor in the board of directors of the Elder Law and Special Needs section of the State Bar of Wisconsin, Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Dr. Lee Vogel is Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, also a founding member of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Great to have them with us today, and I'm sure we have lots of good calls and questions. I'm sure this will be a topic we will be revisiting. Another topic we visited with a bit about, we've had a lot of questions about lately on the show, is relating to Lyme disease and blastomycosis, and we'll talk about that next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.